Should not project a world of pain. Okay, I should come back as a human of that. And again, try to grasp that it's not like there's a factory in Kansas producing bodies, and then there are people with big nets on long sticks catching spirits and unzipping the backs of the bodies and shoving spirits into them. Right? You know that. And it's not even that you come into your mother's womb or something like that. Those are teachings for lower people. Okay? The way you're reborn is that the seeds in your mind shift slightly. In the same way that the seeds in your mind shift when you open a door. Okay? It's not more difficult to be reborn than it is to open a door. Okay? Seeds in your mind, the door doesn't move. Seeds in your mind stop, new seeds come up, the door is open slightly more. Those seeds die, new seeds come up, the door is open a little bit more, the angle increases. There's no such thing as a door opening. It's just seeds in your mind, they die and they are replaced by other seeds. And there are, how many? 65 per millisecond. So it's really stills going like tick, 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 tick. So it takes like, I don't know, 65 stills to get a door open. And that's just coming from your mind. So it's not different to die and go to another realm. It doesn't take more time than opening a door. Okay? It's just a series of stills, new stills. And then you look down and you have a paw. And someone's usually chasing you. Okay? Alright? And that's all. Okay, so person of lowest capacity, who is way above us, they're aware of that and it scares them. And they understand that the only thing that separates me from a paw is the time of a single breath. And then they're nervous about that. You never know when you're going to get hit by a car, right? Walking out of the teaching. And, you know, Ningbo's a pretty wild driver. And, you know, you just don't know. So they are educated enough to be very concerned that negative seeds should not ripen in the moment of death. And they do what they have to do to stop that. And they come to a teaching like this to learn how to make those seeds not ripen. Okay? And then we finished second level motivation, middle person, medium person. Their reason for coming to this teaching would be, you know, even if I control the negative seeds that might ripen as I die and create a very bad world of pain, suppose I can, you know, stop those seeds from growing and I just have positive seeds grow and I become a human again, okay? Then I have to go through again the same sufferings that I went through in this life. Okay? Being born is intense suffering. I think your mind blocks it out. I think you just don't want to think about it. You know. But being born is the process of gestation, 9 months closed in a small closet without being able to move. And then coming out is very traumatic. And I think the mind blocks it out. And then to go through a whole life of ups and downs, you know. Old people got old, partly because the karma wore out, but partly because of the constant flow of ups and downs in life, okay? Small ups and downs are what age people more than the body falling apart, you see? It's just this constant small hopes and then small disappointments. Small, young, each one wears you down, you know? Each little negative thing wears you down. And so a person of medium capacity, like, I don't want to be born into that kind of body. I don't even want to be born into that kind of world. I want to reach a place where I can no longer suffer at all, okay? Not just suffer in a high position. See what I mean? I want to reach a place where I don't suffer at all. That's medium capacity. We just finished that. Okay? Now we're going on to how would a person of highest capacity, why would they come to a teaching like this? He hasn't started the long room yet. Okay? He's just telling you to examine why you came here. And why you do anything, okay? And it's if nothing else in this week of teaching, I'm hoping that you will develop a small habit. Before you do anything, okay? Before you come out on the stage to teach, before you play a song on the piano, before you eat your Indian dinner, which was so nice, before you do anything, you examine your heart and you say, why am I doing this? All right? That's the practice we hope to develop during this week. The habit, before you do anything, okay? Before you stand up during the break to head for the big sale, to overpay wildly for your cookies so that our three young future teachers can go to Sarah and study this year. Before you stand up in the break, you think, why am I gonna shell out so much money for those cookies? Okay, all right? Like that, before you do anything, you examine why. And what we said this morning in the meditation practice was, in this system, you don't fight with a poor motivation. You don't, what do you call that? You don't confront a negative motivation or an insufficient motivation and whip yourself. Okay? Rather, you say, okay, really, you're headed over to the bake sale table because you're hoping that cute girl from Ohio will also be headed there, you know? And that's okay, don't fight that motivation. Don't struggle against your natural tendencies, okay? Just observe them. Somebody was trying to get me to study nonviolent communication, and the first step is just to observe what you do, you know? So you walk, observe yourself going to the table to meet the girl who you might get to go out on a date, who you might get to move in with you, who after 6 months will start fighting with you, who after a year will become your worst enemy. And then you always have to sit on the other side of the room and teach him. So you have to figure out where she is in the teaching and sit on the opposite side. And then you will both get old, disliking each other. One of you will have a car accident. The other will feel intensely guilty that they disliked them all those years. Then the one who didn't get in the car accident will get old, and they will go and lie down in the hospital, and then both face this huge void, unknown territory of the next life, okay? And then follow your natural motivation. Don't struggle against it. Just follow the implications of your current set of motivations, okay? Which is in the hospital room, okay? The motivation to go to the bake sale table to bump into the girl from Ohio ends in the hospital bed. And then the void beyond that, the unknown beyond that. And let your mind get in the habit of ruining all pleasures you have. Get in the habit of examining what your motivations are and what are the consequences of those motivations. Where do they lead to? Inevitably. Then circle back to standing up to go to the bake sale table. Okay? Then circle back to standing up to go to the bake sale table. Approach the bake sale table, hoping the girl from Ohio is also approaching it, and think, may something about our meeting contribute to the happiness of all people. And that's all. You don't have to change the motivation. You can still want to grab the same cookie as her. And you gotta move fast, though. But then the whole motivation is sweetened. It's not ruined, it's sweetened. It's made meaningful. And meaningful things are much sweeter. They make your life much more sweet. It's much more sweet to, you know, walk up to somebody with the intention that perhaps together your practice could be stronger than individually. You know, with that kind of motivation. It's the same action. It's still going to the bake sale table. Okay? But having gone through the long room in your mind and come back just before you stood up, by now she's probably got her cookie and sat down. You have to learn to do this fast, okay? And then what we were saying this morning is your actions may not change that much, okay? It's just that the motivation becomes sweeter and sweeter, okay? And you never do anything without great spiritual purpose. And it's sweet. And you still go to work and you still do all the things you do. Okay? That doesn't change much. Okay. All right. Now we move on to the motivation that a person of greater capacity would try to have. As expected, we are moving through the classes slower than expected. And we'll finish all 10 by the end of the retreat in August, okay? And just get used to that, okay? I'm not going to rush this particular teaching. I'm enjoying this book. And if it takes a long time, I don't care, okay? So you won't get past homework 3 tonight, okay? Do you already have homework 3?
Yes.
Yeah, so we'll probably just reach the end of it or maybe end of it, okay? So don't stress. He didn't even write homework for you. Okay. On a page, we're at page 11A, first line in English. On a page, is it enough motivation to sit down to listen to this teaching in this room tonight, just wanting not to suffer more? Okay. Is that enough of a motivation? Micho, it's not enough. Ramchipa dundun nir, dun to nir ramra chombe go pan top nine, de sangi ramdun yang yonzun mazog. If you are able to achieve nirvana in this lifetime, which as we saw from the teaching, what, Monday night? Last night? Yeah, that's a long time. Involves seeing ultimate reality directly and then using that knowledge to eliminate your negative emotions forever. Okay, that's the definition of nirvana. You see ultimate reality directly and you use that experience to remove your negative emotions forever. Suppose you are able to do that and just reach nirvana in this lifetime. Rangdun yang yongsun mazok shendun yang mitsewan me. This is a very common Lamrim expression, ready? Rangdun yongsun mazok shendun yang mitsewan me. All Buddhist motivation is divided into two halves, okay? Wanting to achieve your own goals and wanting to achieve the goals of others. Okay, so sometimes a Buddha is defined as that being who has fulfilled both goals. Okay, they have done the most that can be done by anybody to fulfill their own goals, and by so doing in the proper way, they have contributed as well as anyone could to the goals of others. Okay. So we usually divide it, your own interests and other people's interests, okay? He says, if you are able to reach simple nirvana without going any further, rang dun yang yong sum ma zo, you haven't really even finished your own goals, okay? Even just your own goals are not complete yet, okay? Shen dun yang ni se wa le me, and you have done no more than a puny contribution to the goals of others. Okay? By achieving a personal nirvana in which you no longer have negative emotions, your own goals are incomplete and the service of others is minimal. Okay? Bangja shibye, dangme shibye gyushi, sok makbangme eche, makbangme eche. Because you have not yet eliminated the obstacles which prevent you from reaching omniscience, okay, and the four causes of unknowing. Okay, let's look those up. Where are you? I didn't print it. No. Okay. I have to give it to you later. In the Abhidharma system, what separates a person who has reached nirvana from a person who is a Buddha is called Mishepe Gyushi. Say Mishepe Gyushi. Let me look it up with Ted Lemon's new exciting search program. So just for those of you who are, you know, slaving away your whole life, for the ACIP project, here's the cool stuff you can do. So I'm looking for this four kinds of obstacles to omniscience. I'm going to search a million pages. You ready? Here we go. Ding. Done. Okay? It's cool, right? And it's not on that page. Okay. Normally, I mean, they mention it, but they don't list what they are. I'm looking for, let's try again. Ready? Here we go. Oh, not on that one either. No. Uh, third. They're all mentioning them, but they're not listing them. Now I have to get to there. Anyway, as I remember, it's like being able to see infinitely far away what's happening in detail. The ability to see infinitely far in time, forward and backward. I believe the ability to see into a student's mind and see perfectly what they need for 1,000 years from now. You know what I mean? And there's a fourth one. Okay? I'll look it up. So in the Abhidharma system, these four, the lack of these four is what separates a person who's reached nirvana from a person who's a Buddha. Okay? In the higher schools, it's special obstacles within your mind which prevent you from becoming omniscient. So what is omniscient? The human mind, as it is now, even if you are who you seem to be, which I don't know, but the human mind, even now, is possessed of the capability to see all things in all times at the same moment. Okay? Your mind was built in the factory to perceive all things in all times in a single moment. Okay? It's not a problem for your mind to look at the page you're on now and also read all the other pages of the book at the same time. Okay? Your mind has this capacity. And that capacity is covered, or it's blocked. Okay? And then what separates you from being a Buddha mentally are these subtle energies in the mind, obstacles, which block that capacity. Okay? And if you do yoga well and you're able to open the heart chakra, or if you meditate well and you're able to have a direct experience of emptiness or something like that, in the same day, during that day, you will have experiences of what it's like to be on mission. Okay? You will have brief flashes of impossible things happening. For example, seeing the faces of every living being in the world at the same time, animal and human. Okay? You have that capacity, and when you open the heart chakra fairly well, you will, that capacity will be uncovered. Alright? So he says, because you haven't removed those obstacles, you are not able to serve others perfectly. Okay? It would be like going in to see a doctor who, in the first moment he or she met you, could see all the medical history that you've ever had and ever will have. Okay? It would save a lot of money. Right? And so in the first moment of meeting you, this doctor could look at you and see every disease you're ever going to have and every disease you've ever had for thousands of years back and thousands of years ahead. And then they would treat you accordingly. Okay? Would you rather meet a doctor like that? Or one who couldn't see 5 minutes into the future? You see what I mean? Because oftentimes medical treatment kills the patient because they don't see unforeseen complications, right? So when he says you have no more than a grossly insufficient capacity to serve others, that's what he's talking about, okay? When a Buddha is your teacher, right? Then you're in good hands, right? Because everything they do is designed for thousands of years ahead. They know what's going to happen to you for the next 1,000 years, infinite years. So when they ask you to do something, it's probably wise to do it, you know. There was a joke in the diamond business. Do you know why all the diamond business is in Antwerp, in Belgium? There's no diamonds in Belgium. And there's no cutting there anymore. All the offices are in Belgium. It's near to Switzerland. Okay? And all the tax, you know, you can funnel all your income to Switzerland, to a bank account, and not pay taxes anywhere. You see? And the Belgian government doesn't mind. Because they tax you for moving the money to Switzerland. And it's legal. But in the diamond business, they say if you're on a 20-story, top of a 20-story building with your Swiss banker, and he jumps, just jump. You know, don't ask any questions. Just jump. He knows something. You know, so it's like that. You know, you should try to find a lama who you believe at least is a Buddha, and then. And then feel confident in following their instructions because they can see your future indefinitely. And they might tell you to do weird stuff that has implications for 1,000 years out. And therefore, it's not necessarily the case that their instructions would seem logical to you at any given moment. Okay. If you don't think your teacher is a Buddha, then you should find one that you think is. Okay? That simplifies things. You should so my pan vecha. Then a rab del chitla jechang ni che gobatar. Okay, like this is a totally impossible expression. In Tibet, there were no bridges until recently. Okay? And there are many rivers because of the snow mountains. So you go half a mile and you run into a river. And then there are 40 places, okay? Rab, they're called rab. And not spelled the same as the other rab. Misspelled here, sorry, I think. Anyway, then that's places where the river gets broad, but shallow. And it's usually gravel. And then you can walk across, okay? But especially if you're a monk, you have to hitch up your skirts and gather them in your hand, okay? Then you have to be able to hold all the stuff you're carrying and hold up your skirts at the same time. Got it? So if you're going to cross a ford, you should learn how to hold up your robes and carry your stuff with the same hands. Okay? What's that got to do with what we're doing? Taking love and that's what we by Tolkien. You can enter a lower track. Okay? There are lower tracks and higher tracks. Lower track, you go through your whole spiritual career on a lower track, all the way up to nirvana. Okay? What makes it a lower track? We talked about it last night. Maybe you don't understand emptiness completely, or certainly you don't have a bodhisattva motivation. Okay, you are not operating. You don't get up to go to the bake sale table to save the world. Okay, because a bodhisattva would. By the way, is it impossible that a bodhisattva would get up to save the world and meet the girl from Ohio?
Yes,
very possible. Okay? No problem. Okay? So you can go along a lower track, have no particular concern for other people, and you can reach nirvana. You can struggle along the five stages of spiritual evolution and reach nirvana. You can do it without developing a concern for the welfare of every other living being. It's possible. Laryam chanchuki sankhe de tepa chabek solam ne sunte gyasa ke chepa la shine la go. But then still you're going to have to start over again at the beginning of the same trap, the same five paths in the bodhisattva trap. Okay? So you might as well, what? Hold your robes and your stuff and walk. Okay? Which means follow the teachings of the lower track, which are shared with the higher track, and follow the higher track at the same time. rather than going all the way to nirvana on the lower track and then coming back for your stuff and then going to the whole thing again on the bodhisattva track. Go on the bodhisattva track and you will be holding both at the same time. Got it? Okay. By the way, those of you who care, the fourth syllable of the fourth line. Where are we? Can you get that line? It starts with Chipala. The line that starts with Chipala. Go. And I, wait, no, go back up. Did you re-split the lines? Yeah. Okay. That's what the people who call it the tenure do. And we can't see where we are. Okay. Hopefully we can fix it. Anyway, Chipala, Shine, she, what's a Shine? Shine. Shamatha, okay? Ultimate capacity of meditation. We spoke about Shine about 10,000 times last course, okay? That's where he's like flying off. Okay, that's Shine, Shamatha. But this spelling is different, those of you who care. This is Shine, which is a Tibetan colloquialism for then after the fact. Okay? Shine. Say Shine.
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 The second one is Shamatha. The first one means after the fact. And people get them confused all the time, which is unfortunate. Because then they start talking about after the fact when they're supposed to be meditating. Okay? Alright? And those of you who care, that expression is very common in colloquial Tibetan, in the monastery, for example, when you want to say, finally. Okay, like you send somebody out to find your sen. And they like wander around outside, they look through all the cars, and then they come back and bring it. And you say, Shine. Okay, Shine. Alright? It's a nice word to know. It's not the same as Shine. Okay? Shine. Not Gope. You'll have to go back and start over again. Okay? Perna, Gope Chibla, Sanshuk Che, Lardene, Kebe Par, Chesin. For example, suppose you enter a monastery. Okay? Entering a monastery is not easy. Okay? Because the food is free. Okay? So someone has to vouch for you. Maybe three people will vouch for you. So first of all, three monks have to vouch for you. This guy can be a good monk. And then you have to get accepted by one of the 12 colleges. In Saramay, you have to be accepted by one of the 12 colleges. One of the 12 colleges has to say, we accept them as a member of our college. I remember it was a very moving ceremony to be accepted. You know, and you feel like, wow, you know, I'm in the club now. You know, and then they vouch for you. All these people have to stand up and vouch for you. Then somebody has to vouch for you. Then you enter the monastery. Then your first formal duty is washing dishes. And that lasts for a long time. Okay? I washed dishes for 8 years. Okay? The youngest monk had to wash dishes. Then you might work up to tea pourer. The little monk who runs through the assembly and pours tea for him. They don't have bake sales. They have tea in these huge metal pitchers. And the abbot says, come. And 30 novices run in and start pouring tea into everybody's wooden bowl, right? So that's called a lakde. Lakde means they have a good head. Like lam, like vela. The day means happy or pleasant. So lakde means good head. Because they can pour tea all over everybody. They gotta be able to pour tea for like 1,000 guys in 30 seconds and not spill anybody. Okay, on anybody. He says, you enter the monastery, you work your way up from Lakde to Kembo. What's Kembo? Abbot. So you work your way up from the tea pourer guy up to Abbot, which normally takes about 50 years. Okay? Lakde, Kembo Parachisine, Larayana, then you quit that monastery and you go sign up for another monastery and you wash dishes for another 8 years. And then you get to be the Lagde and pour tea for what, 10 years. And then you struggle your way up to abbot again. Okay? What's he talking about? Yeah, it goes through a Hinayana track to all the way to Nirvana and then start over again on the Bodhisattva track. Why waste your time? Just enter the Bodhisattva monastery in the first place. Okay? Like that. It's a very important example in a monastery. His listeners were like, yeah, who'd be that stupid? Okay? Gopa Shenshi to Sarshu Tena Nesin Shishi Jigupa Tarjure. Dena Dabonine Techena Jupa Kelche. Therefore, it's very crucial that we learn from the beginning to have a bodhisattva attitude when we undertake any task. Okay? We undertake any task from the beginning with a bodhisattva attitude, which is third level attitude. Okay, third chapter. Dayan Lobjing Mei. Lobjing is what is that? Shiksha Mecca. Who wrote that? I think it's Arya Nagarjuna, I'm not sure. Nedu Korwe Gyatsu Kungsu Chugyur De Logi Nam Du Thungwa Tara Nam Shin Du Kishi Pube Moma Shepe De Porme Kelte Chik Tarchena De Le Chau Porme Chalorme. Sorry. Nedu Korwe, you're in a boat, okay? Gyatso, you're on the sea. You are sailing on the ocean sea. Longi Nantu, you come to a, what do you call those things? A whirlpool. There's another word, there's a fancy word. Like a maelstrom? That's a big whirlpool. It's like what your bathtub does, but it's big enough to sink the Titanic. A vort. Yeah, anyway, you know what I'm talking about. Someone falls off the ship. Like, you're on the edge of one of these huge world. There is a word. Sounds like vortex, but it's not. What's it called? It's at sea level and down. Anyway, it's like spinning around, okay? And then someone falls off, right? And then they kind of stop and you keep going. I used to row, what do you call it?
Crew.
Yeah. And if you, they call feather. Feather means if the oar catches on a ripple and it's ripped out of your hands and it flies out of the boat, hopefully it doesn't take your chin with it, then you're supposed to jump out of the boat. Because they can't carry you because you're not contributing. You're supposed to immediately jump out of the boat. You get hit by everybody else. So, but then you're going about, I don't know, 40 miles an hour, and then suddenly that guy is way back there. You know, he's like in the water, like 50 feet behind in a second, you know? And this is the same. Somebody falls out while you're in the world, maelstrom, whatever. And then you can see them across the whirlpool. You can see them on the other side. The whirlpool is as big as like 20 ships or something, okay? Longi number thuma tava nong shindu. Keshi pobe noma shepa. We go through cycles of death and entering new worlds. And then we forget who the person who fell overboard is. You know, like we go through another cycle. And then we can see them across the way. And we think, who was that? We forget they fell off the ship that we were on. You see what I mean? Like we see them struggling, drowning. And the ship has already passed to the other side. And you're looking across and you say, and you forgot who it was. Okay? Maybe they were your mother or your father, okay? And time passes. You go, there's a huge trauma in the mind when seeds of a whole lifetime are destroyed. and you can't remember much, okay? Then you can't, you might run into someone. My brother died, I don't know, 1975 or something, okay? Then I wouldn't recognize him now if I met him. Supposedly he should be, what, 30-something now, okay? And I wouldn't know him if I ran into him. Sometimes you wonder. You meet somebody who looks a little like him. Okay? Noma shepa kelte chik tarchina. And if you refuse to throw a lifeline to that person because you didn't know them anymore, right? Dele chau por me. What would be more shameless than that? See, that's your own brother. Okay? And you just don't recognize him anymore. And you don't help him. Okay? You just say, I don't know who that guy is. And because of the passing of a whole lifetime, you don't recognize him anymore. And then you say, good luck, man. You know, like, you don't try. Okay? When the Jesus Matar, Rangre Tensen Loma Shepat Samne, we have been, all of us in this room, we have met each other countless times. And I, if we are in this particular room together, we must have been extremely close. Okay? We must have been family. Okay? All, each one of us has been family of another within the past two or three lifetimes. Okay? You have been very, very close to me. Okay? Or you wouldn't be in this room. You wouldn't have the sense to be sitting through the highest Lamrim teachings with someone unless you were extremely close in the past life. But we don't recognize each other. You know, I can't say that's my brother, that's my mother who died. Okay? Bona dina sentin tachiki. Dagi mama chipa, chikyang me. And there is no one in this room who has not been your mother. Okay? There is no one in this room who didn't have their insides ripped out bearing you. Okay? There's no one sitting around you who didn't risk their life to give you birth recently. Okay? No one you meet in this room has not suffered, you know, forget the pain of birth. I mean, what about the next 20 years? No, it's just when you decide to have a child, you sacrifice your life. You know, it doesn't end. There's no one in this room around you now who hasn't done that for you recently. Okay? Daki kiwa, tamme bashindu, mayang tamme. I have had countless lives, and so I have had countless mothers. Deje daki ma machibe, sente. Therefore, there's not a single living person in this world who has not been your mother. Ma nam che re ki tate sin di ma dan kipa mepe. And they weren't any less kind to you than your mother in this life has been kind to you. Okay? They've been equally kind. Kipa jingi kyamba shata ye. Each one of them took care of you hour by hour, day by day, year after year. You know, the 85-year-old lady I take care of, right? She's coming on Thursday, I hope. We're practicing 1920s jazz songs to make her happy. She's still taking care of her kids. She's still, you know, they still come over and cry, and she takes, and she, you know, after, you know, 65 years later, you know, they still come and whine, and she still hugs them and tells them, you know, okay, things will be all right, you know. So everybody around you has been doing that for you for countless lifetimes. Everyone in this room has held you in their arms for countless hours and comforted you, okay? Shatayime, Senjin Tanche, Tan Sendi Mani, Machepa, Tan Dingi Kyamala Keba, Chukse Kyamme. And they're makes no difference, you see, between the way your current mother took care of you and the way they did. Okay? There's no difference. It's not like they took less care of you than your mother. Okay?
Yanda shiki dita sente. Sentem tante daki mama yente. Ma yina lo she kura.
Then he says some people will get a weird thought in their head. Okay? By the way, there's another weird thought that Americans get in their head, but I'll tell you the one he says. Some people get this weird thought in their head. It's not true that every living being has been my mother, because if they had, I would recognize them. Okay? Mama inda shigoda me deta no mashepe so. Sen de maya no mashepa mangasipe. But you know, even in this world, there are lots of people who don't know who their mother was, who their birth mother was. Okay? There are lots of people who are adopted or things like that. They could meet their mother on a bus, sit down next to them for an hour, and not know who they were. If it's possible for people in the same life not to recognize the person who gave them birth, then what's the big deal about not recognizing people who were your mother in other lives? Okay? He's like debating this guy. The debate you get in America is, I don't like my mother. my mother didn't take care of me very well, you know. And that may be, you know, it could be, you know, parents, I mean, when the kid comes out, oftentimes they're not ready to have a kid, you know. They don't know what to do. And maybe they're not very good at it the first two times, right? Mama Christie's dad has had now 3 families. And he's on his 6th and 7th daughters. And he told me one night, he says, now I got it right. You know, however your mother, you know, if you go over to your mother's house now and she treats you like you're 13 and yells at you and bosses you around and you don't get along, it doesn't change the fact that she conceived you, that she decided to keep you, that knowing that it might cost her life, she bore you. Okay? She knew that it's dangerous to give birth, and she knew she might lose her life. And she knew it would be extremely painful. She knew that. And she still decided to do it. Right? And she carried you for the 9 months, and then afterwards, you could say you don't like your mother, but she taught you how to talk. I mean, it's happening right now. She taught you how to talk. She taught you how to walk. She taught you how to wear your clothes. She taught you how to not be like an animal. You know? No, and there's no rest. It's constant. I mean, if they leave you for an hour, if they leave you for a couple hours, you could die. You might kill yourself, or something else might kill you, right? And so you could say, after the age of 15, my mother didn't like me. But you can't deny that she took care of you every hour for many years, okay? And that she risked her life to bear you. And that it was extremely painful, okay? Deyana kenchen deyana ladaki chinsor chagula. So you should have some kind of desire to pay them back, okay? Even in this life, there should be, unless you're like, I was going to say retarded, but my Lama told me not to say retarded anymore. Unless you're like really physically, mentally challenged, you'd have to be some kind of a very cold-hearted person not to want to pay them back, not to want to repay their kindness. You'd have to be extremely insensitive person not to want to pay back their kindness in some way. Okay? I like Jesus in the Bible. He says, what's that? Heart of stone. You have a heart of stone, or you have a hard heart.
You'd have to have a heart of stone not to have some small desire to do something bad to help them, right? Deyam tepala seedam kumbala duvadam uvala norso jinde simpa chepayam jinsuwa tsangyin muk. To pay her back, you could make her some food once in a while. Kumbala duva, you could make her something to drink when she was thirsty. Uvala nor, when she needed money, you could give her a few dollars, right? You can do that. So thanks, Simba Chepayam, Jinsawat Samyin Mun. I would admit that, says Pabo Gurbache, I would admit that that is some kind of repayment of their kindness. Okay? I would agree. Wen Kyang, De Sandi Tamba Chen Ming Yor. But that doesn't really help them much. Okay? What? Keeps them from being hungry for a few hours. Keeps them from being thirsty for a few hours. Okay? That's not such a high way of repaying their kindness. Mingyur. Chin so a chok to Gyurpani, Dewa Tamjeta Dhammache, Dewa Tamjeta Dhamma Chene. The highest form of repaying someone's kindness would be to give them every happiness that is possible and to take away every suffering they would ever encounter. Okay? It's a little more radical. Our goal is not to fix spaghetti dinner for mom, or to make sure she has water in her house, okay? It's like you have the capacity to prevent your mother from ever suffering again the slightest pain, and you have the capacity to give her every happiness there is, okay? Then why give her something less? Does that mean you shouldn't cook spaghetti dinners for your mom? No. I mean, they're not mutually exclusive. Spaghetti is one of the pleasures. Okay, of life. Okay. And Dora Chini. Dele Fakbe Chinso Mele. There is no higher form of repaying someone's kindness than to help them reach a state where they could never suffer again. Right? And that they would have all possible forms of happiness. There's, if you're gonna pay your mom back, you might as well go big time. Okay? Maybe dena masam chindinam deva tamchegan dena nyambe jamba. Therefore, we have to try to develop love, maitri, right? Which is defined as wanting them to all have every happiness. And dunya tamchegan jana nyambe ningje. And karuna, compassion, where we want them to be free of all kinds of pain, every kind of pain. Even like, what do you call it? Chipping their fingernail. You see what I mean? You want them to be free of all kinds of pain. Deyan, marade dark devan tamchaitan, dhamma dham, dunya tamchaitan, jarwa chame, kurbu, dark la pape, deta bu dark chipu, chao, nyambe, kurdu, we have a whole class coming up in New York, May 1st, about the idea of flaksam. What's flaksam? Flaksam is where you take responsibility. The buck stops here. Flaksam means the buck stops here. Okay? I take responsibility. Okay? Like in an organization, I think for the organization to succeed, there has to be one person who says, I'm responsible. You know? Whatever happens, whatever problems, financial, personnel problems, every kind of problem there is, I'll take care of it. If nobody else will, I will. Okay? The buck stops here and I accept it. Happily, I accept that responsibility. Laksam is a very beautiful concept. Okay? Laksam means I'll take care of it, or die trying, okay, like that. Plaksan is very, very beautiful. And I think it's, the reason I chose it for New York, for the teaching in New York at the Three Jewels, is I felt like we don't have that so much anymore, you know? It's like we don't,
the idea of Haksam has sort of disappeared a little bit, or I don't know. Like, you don't meet people who say, you know, don't worry, whatever happens, I'm there, I'll take care of it, you know. I'm responsible. You mostly meet people who say, so, in this case, Haksam means, I'll take care of my mom. Z. Okay? I'll make sure they have what they need, and I'll make sure they don't have any pain. Ever. Okay? I'll make sure that they get everything they ever wanted, and more. And I'll make sure they never have any form of suffering. And I don't care if no one helps me. I don't care what. I'm the man. You know, or the woman, okay? I take responsibility. That's Haksam. Okay, so he's describing that here. I myself, even if no one helps me, I accept that responsibility. Okay? It will, if I'm the only person, in the scripture they say, even if I'm the only person who wants to do it and everyone fights me, you know, much less, what's a chicken little? Aside from, much less help you, they try to thwart you, or they hassle you. And you say, I don't care if no one helps me, and I don't care if everybody in the world tries to block me, I am going to save the world. And I take responsibility for everybody. Okay? I take responsibility. Like that. It's very beautiful. I feel really, I don't know, excited when I think of that. Spider-Man can do it. It's okay. Okay. When Ona cannot eat that never yet a mention, and now this gets a little uncomfortable. Then Prabhupada Rinpoche says, excuse me, but do you have the capacity to do that? Like, can we trust you? You say we should all put ourselves in your hands. Like, what are your qualifications to save us all? You know, how good are you at that? Okay, all right? To be frank, you don't have the capacity to make yourself happy. How are you going to take care of everybody else? You know? He's like being very honest. He says, from my observation, knowing you for however long I've known you, observing you, I don't believe you know how to make yourself happy, much less everybody else. Okay? I mean, what are you talking about? You can't even make yourself happy for a week straight. You don't have the capacity to make your, with all your effort and all your attention and all your skills and all your devotion to yourself, you are not able to go through a whole day happy. Then what do you mean you're going to take on the, you're going to Haksam everybody else? Okay, well, what do I have to do to get qualified? You know, like, Spider-Man drank a potion, right? He got bit by a spider. That was easier. Okay. Why did Spider-Man hit him? I don't know. Reshik Nyeron Dung Daksala Nepe Chajus Sembal Namki Kyan Sajanki Dun New Mur. He says, I would admit that people who have reached nirvana or people who are high bodhisattvas have some capacity to help others. But they are nitsewa le sangye, jita nipamin. But they don't have the special skills of a being who can see all time and all space. Okay? They just are limited. Okay? That's that thing of the doctor who can see your whole medical history for the next 10,000 lifetimes. They might not give you the pill that you expected. Dena sanjengi dun zepa na denda dan chawa ni sange nyakchi say nyakchi
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 nyakchi means one and only. Okay, the one and only person who is able to really help people is someone who's omniscient. Okay? The Buddha's omniscient is the Buddha omnipotent.
We say no. Okay? We say you can reach a state where you know all things, but you can never reach a state where you have all power. Okay? It's not possible. If it were possible, I wouldn't have had my car break down. I wouldn't have got the bill today that I got for my car. All right? I was lucky, you know. The guy the week before took double. He broke down twice. If it's possible for us, if there's an omnipotent being who's not a schmuck, then I wouldn't have any problems at all. Okay? The fact that I am having problems either means there is an omnipotent being who's a schmuck, or there's nobody who's omnipotent. I prefer to think the latter. Okay, alright. I don't think it's fair to be omnipotent and not help people out. You know when they paint a Buddha? You can see here, if you come up close, they put it on Tsukapa. But there are light rays coming out of their body. You can see like a network of light rays coming out of their body. So the idea is that every single gesture, when an enlightened being makes an offhand gesture, that in itself helps billions of critters in the universe. Okay? They go like that for a reason. And then just they go like that, and then 10,000 people are happier. Okay? So the effects of the repercussions of their slightest movement are helpful for countless people. Okay? Semchen Rere Dungi Yangrarang Kamda Wango Da Samba Da Baga Nyo Da Tumba Kur Chu. Okay? We'll finish this line and then we'll take a break. For this is very, very famous in Buddhist scripture, okay? This is the whole thing is famous. But I'm just giving you the main things, okay? A Buddha has the power to know someone's kham, their wangbo, their sampa, their bakla nyelwa, okay? So there's four things, okay? Their kham, their wangbo, their sampa, and their bakla nyelwa. You guys know kham because we talked about it a lot in Dharma. What is kham? Kham means their propensities, right? What they might be good at. Now, some people often come up to me and they say, what should I do in my life? And then if you were a Buddha, you could look into their heart and say, you should be a lawyer. No, I had John Roadhouse, okay? You know him from Chicago. He's like 70 now or something, 65, I don't know. But he's a lawyer. And he's a good lawyer, and he helps many, many people. So he was a hippie in 1965 or something. He was just a hippie. And he was following around Chogyam Trungpa. You know, just no money, always broke, following around Chogyam Trungpa, who was one of the first lamas to come to the United States. So then Chogyam Trungpa looks at him one day and says, John, you're going to go to law school next year. You know, and John's like, huh? You know, I'm a hippie. You know, and he's like, no, you're going to law school. And he told him to leave. And he did. He went to law school. He became a lawyer. Okay? And there was a very crucial moment in the history of the Shambhala centers. And they needed, it was a crucial moment for their existence. And they needed a lawyer. And he was there. And he saved it. And the whole Rocky Mountain Center, all this stuff in Colorado, in Nova Scotia, Tipton, Chudron, all of those places, Boulder, the Europa Institute, they all exist because John was a lawyer at the right moment. Okay? And, he saw his calm. You see, the Lama saw his calm, and he saw his future, and he said, go to law school. And he obeyed his teacher, which is really unusual.
then, and he didn't want to. It was the last thing he wanted to do. I mean, the worst thing for a hippie to do in those days was to go to Austin. I mean, it's the most, you call it, embarrassing thing to be asked to do. Okay. Go straight, wear a tie, go to law school. No, please, anything but that. Okay. Wangbo means power, like Wang means an empowerment. Right? But Wangbo means your intellect. Okay, your intellectual powers is called Wangbo. How intelligent are they? Some people you can, you know, a student can get close to you and you can put them into shape quickly, which is always painful. Okay? But they're sharp enough to take it. You know? So you can push them a little faster than is comfortable. But they have the intelligence to know that this is going to work. That I'll do it. It's not pleasant for me. The Lama is pushing me a little fast. But they have the intelligence to know that it's going to be, it's for something important. Okay? That's called Wangbo. Okay? So a Buddha has capacity to see what the person might be able to do, and they can see how far they can push them. Okay? Sangha means what's their general likes and dislikes? You know, what are their own goals? They fit their demands to the student's own wishes. They're very good at sculpting their demands to the natural wishes of the student. The student always wanted to be a ballet dancer. And the Lama doesn't say you're never going to be a ballet dancer. They figure out a way that they can save the world by becoming a ballet dancer, even if they're no good at it. Okay? That's called Sangha. Okay. Then the last one is Bhakla Nyawa. This is more difficult. Bhakla Nyawa is the same as Bhak Chao. Okay. Bhak means deep subconscious. Nyawa means to sleep. Bhakla Nyawa means deep-seated subconscious seeds in the student's mind. Okay? Bhakla Nyawa means deep-seated seeds in the Buddhist mind. You want to know, do you have time? The classical scriptural example of Bhakla Nyawa is in the Abhidhamma Kosha. There was a student of Lord Buddha, okay? Jindak Belke, I think. And Kimdak Belke. And I think, I'm not sure. But the Buddha had these two amazing students named Shariputra and Maugalyayana, right? And I forget which one. I think it was Maugalyayana, but I'm not sure. But one of them had the ability to read people's minds. So this guy came to apply to be a monk, you know? And the Buddha, to save his time, wouldn't even interview everybody who came to be a monk. He would have Maugalyana, I think, go out and read the person's mind and say they do have a seed or they don't have a seed. And if Maugalyana said they didn't have a seed, then the Buddha wouldn't waste his time on an interview because he's busy. Okay. So he sent Maugalyana out to mentally check this guy's mind. And he came back in and he said, hopeless. There's no seed anywhere in his subconscious, you know. And the Buddha goes, bring him in. And Maugalyana's like, why? There is a seed. There's one seed in the mind. Among billions of seeds in his mind, there's one seed. He can become a monk, and he will become an arahant. You know, and Maugalyana's like, I don't see it, Lord Buddha. And he says, you know, look down the cortex to the left. And he's like, oh, I see a fly. And he's like, yeah, he was a fly. How does that make him qualify, you know, become a monk? No, look closer. He's on a cow turd. That's it. I don't understand. Look deeper. The cow turd is moving. You got it. What? There's a rainstorm. The cow turd is being washed down the side of a hill. How does that make him qualified?
Look deeper.
Oh, the cow turd is floating down the hill towards a stupa, towards a shrine, you know. Yeah, yeah. See what happens when the water hits the shrine. The water hits the shrine. The cow turd goes around, one time around the shrine. He does one circumambulation, riding on a cow turd. As a fly in a rainstorm, he says he can become a cow. He's got that good karma in his mind. He's got that seed in his mind. That's Bhakran Yama. Sounds like Baklava. A Buddha has the capacity to look deeply into the student's mind and see. Okay? Bhakran Yama Kodri. Tumbe kor tru. Okay? Say tumbe kor tru. Switch the last two words. Tuku. Okay? Say tuku. Or you can say tuku. Tuku means, nowadays it means a reincarnated monk. Like the second Pavoka Pichin would be called a tuku. But originally it meant an avatar sent by an enlightened being. I love that movie. What's the best part of that movie? You tell me. What? Yeah, he's dying in the trailer. And she feels him, she senses him, she breaks into the trailer, and she sees he's just a cripple. He's not what she thought he was, and she still recognizes him, right? And then she still loves him. Okay, anyway, where were we? Oh yeah, so a Buddha has the capacity to emanate perfectly to address a person's capacity, their thoughts, their intellectual level, and their deep seeds. Okay? Like that. Okay? They have perfect capacity to show whatever form might be perfectly suited to that student at that moment. Okay? Last line, they will have cookies. They also have this beautiful ability to speak whatever language the student needs. Okay? They can speak all languages. Sarva Bhuta Rutas Jnana. Where does that come from? Yoga Sutra. They have the capacity to speak all languages. Okay? And then they can speak whatever language the student speaks. They can speak to them in their own language. It doesn't just refer to a foreign language, right? They know how to talk people's talk. If they walk into a bar, they're like, who's winning the game? You know, like that. Okay, they immediately morph to the person's language. And the person immediately feels comfortable with them. And that's a skill you can start developing now, right? Pay attention to how people talk and what they talk about, and then try to morph to them. And then they'll feel more comfortable with you, right? Okay. So we'll take a 10-minute break, and then when we come back, we'll do some questions, okay? And maybe we'll have time to do a little bit more. Okay, we have a little bit of time. Oh, I need to ask if there's anybody who can give our visiting yoga teacher a ride from the airport on Thursday night, right after the class. Okay, so talk to Jeff Alexander, okay? Thank you. You'll like her. They asked me to write a bio for her, and I said, she's the only person who can make me blush. Okay. Okay, any questions? Anybody have a question? Yeah.
How many people can you tell us are living now who have seen her yesterday?
Oh, boy. She said, how many people are living now who have seen emptiness directly? I think in the monastery, when you asked a question like that in a debate, the person would ask for a clarification. The person answering would ask for a clarification. They would say, tantric system or not? They would say, are you talking tantra or not?
Not.
Okay, not talking the secret teaching.
Right.
It seems like you get one about every 600 or 700 years. Okay. In the world. Okay.
Yeah. So, Momoko was saying that
it takes.
If you become an arahat and you don't have bodhicitta, or if you're not on the bodhisattva track, then you'd have to go all the way back to the beginning. Is that literal?
Like, yeah. You,
but haven't you kind of escaped having to be reborn once you become an arahat?
That's a good question. Okay, so there are three tracks, and each. They all start. They all follow the same pattern. The tracks are useful because these are the steps of spiritual evolution for all people of all religions. Okay, the steps of spiritual evolution are the same for everybody. Doesn't matter what religion you're in. You will go through five great thresholds in the course of your spiritual evolution, and all beings will become enlightened. Okay? We believe that. So, and they always start the same and they always go through the same steps. It's useful to know the five steps because then you can sort of tell where you are. It's helpful, right? So, first step is called Soklan, which means you become dismayed with the state of this world. Usually, it comes from some personal trauma. Okay. So the best Dharma students are those who have had some very serious personal trauma. And we gave examples the other day. Maybe their mother was murdered, or somebody's mother committed suicide, or my brother committed suicide, or something has to wake you up to say, I need to do something. And usually it's a personal tragedy. So you have to wake up, you have to see how serious things are. So in our system, if you have a personal tragedy, people are like, "Hey, you know who was Milarepa's disciple? You know, main disciple, Gampopa. Gampopa started out as a layperson, and he was married, and his wife died unexpectedly, and then he went to her uncle, and he said, 'I have the most wonderful news,' you know, and he's like, 'What?'" He said, "My wife died. I can become a monk." You know? And then the uncle picked up dirt and threw it in his face, you know? And he said, "You're so cold-hearted, you know? How could you say that?" But it was something pushes you. Some disaster pushes you to get serious about your spiritual life. You encounter death firsthand, or someone dear to you dies, like that. And then you wake up. Okay. Second path is when you start to understand where things are coming from. Okay. And you could say Buddhist emptiness, blah, 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 but I mean, Jesus taught the same thing, right? Jesus was saying, what's the golden rule? You reap what you sow, right? Sorry, do unto others as you would have them do unto you,
okay?
If you begin to have insights into that fact, you have reached step number two. If you perceive that fact directly in a deep state of spiritual transformation, you have reached step number three. If you use that brief experience to overcome all your negativities, you have reached, during that process is stage four. When you succeed, that's stage five. Okay? You can go through all five stages on a lower track, which means without any particular concern for other people's welfare, you take care of yourself. Okay? You can do that. It's possible. Okay? And I used to ask my teacher, Ken Rinpoche, I used to say, well, when you go through the whole thing and then you have to start over, why do you have to start over? You know? Why do you have to start over? I mean, you already saw emptiness. So can't you just kind of go from stage 5, level 2, to stage 5, level 3, and just finish it off? Why did they say you have to start over again serving the tea, and then work your way up to Adam again, you see? And he said, because love, compassion, occurs at the first stage. You see, on level 3, when you go from the first two levels to level 3, you must go through the first stage. You must start from the first stage. Then I said, we normally describe the first stage as renunciation. You realize there's a problem with this mind, okay? And then I said, but on the third level, the first step is what? Universal love, right? Bodhicitta. Love for all beings and the wish to help them, okay? Then I said, you know, why is it so different? And he said, oh, that's a famous question, you know. And then he said, in this path system, 15 paths, right? 5, 5, 5. Renunciation on the third level is simply expanded to all other people. You use logic. You know, my mother died. My brother died. I'm having a hard time. Gee, I wonder if anyone else is. Okay, like, you know what I mean? So he said, level 3, first step, is the same as level 1 and 2, a personal disaster. But at the moment that you have it, you think to yourself, I wonder if other people are having the same thing happen to them. So you do have to start over. You do have to enter from the first path. Okay? You don't have a choice. You do have to sign up for a new monastery and start serving tea. It's a waste of time. Might as well just start up here. Okay? Whoa, that's a course.
Well, I want to say thanks, Joshua, for teaching, and don't give up on me yet.
Thank you for my cover.
Yesterday there was a phrase in there teaching about the veritable infinitude of reasons for emptiness. I'm wondering if you could remind me of scriptural authorities for what you've often told us about. If you want to own a ride, give a ride, you know, the good things in my life are consequence of providing them for others.
Okay.
I'd like to just remember and be able to use the scriptural part of that.
Okay. Let's try ACIP again, okay? I'll bring this on a little later. Okay, so I happen to know there's a very famous quotation that will satisfy him. I remember a piece of the verse. So I asked the computer, I remember a piece, can you tell me the rest? Okay, you ready? Million pages. Ready? Go. Impress them. Oh, he didn't find it. Oh, I misspelled it. It's not his fault. Okay. Let's try again. Here we go. Go.
Come on.
All right. Like, how many seconds? I don't know. Yeah. So it went through a million pages. It found the quotation I want. This is from Aryanagarjuna. Okay? This is the most famous verse of scripture in support for the idea that Brian gave the example that if you want to have a ride, if you want to have a good car, you have to give a lot of rides. Okay? People like wonder why they pay a lot of money for a car and it turns out to be a lemon. Right? Money doesn't get you a good car. You maybe experienced that. Okay. Say it, it's very good luck. It's one of the most famous verses in all of Buddhism. You ready? Here, we're going to recite it. It'll be a kirtan, okay? Say, Jinbei Longche.
Jinbei Longche.
Tim Ki De.
Tim Ki De.
Sirpe Dung Den.
Sirpe Dung Den.
Simbe Ji.
Simbe Ji.
Samden Ki Shi.
Samden Ki Shi.
Lo Yin Cho.
Lo Yin Cho.
So this is Aryanagarjuna. And in a single verse, he puts forth the correlations of karma in a brief verse. He puts forth the most important correlations, meaning do this, get that. He does so by following the six perfections. Okay. He gives the results. He outlines in a single verse the karmic results of following the six perfections. Okay. And they're very, very, very famous. So Jinbei Longche means if you give money, you will be wealthy. Okay. Jinbei Longche. If you give material wealth, you will receive material wealth. Okay. Jinbei Longche. Chimgi De. If you strive never to hurt other people, you will be a happy person. Okay. That's second karmic correlation. Chimgi De. Sirpe Dung Den. If you wish to be beautiful, physically beautiful, then be a patient person. Don't get angry. Okay. It will change your, the karma will change your appearance. Okay. Sirpe Dangden. Chimbe Ji. Take delight in doing virtuous activities because then you will achieve authority over people. Personally, I like to be the boss of everything. I don't like to be in any situation where someone's telling me what to do. I just really don't like it. Okay? If you're similar, then you would want to not just do good things, but enjoy. Okay? Take joy in opportunities to serve other people. So that's different from the serving. Got it? It's how you feel about the serving. Got it? It's to enjoy it. To get high on serving other people is the karmic cause of getting to be the boss in every situation in your life. Okay? I like that. Alright. Chimbeji. Samden Ki Shi. The karma of learning to meditate well is that you feel at peace with yourself all the time. Okay? Samden Ki Shi. Loi Tro. The karma of attempting to understand where the things in your world are coming from is that you will achieve spiritual liberation. Okay? So those are six actions and six karmic results of those actions. And anytime someone says, his challenge was, could you back up your statement that, you know, your car would work better if you gave rides, right? They always quote that verse. They always pull out that verse. Okay. And it's nice verse to learn. People are always coming up to me and saying, I want to learn Tibetan. You should learn that verse. Okay. It's a beautiful verse. It's a really crucial verse in Buddhism. Okay. And Ningbo can help you find it. Sorry? I think it's shifting. No, he says Rinchen Tama. The computer says, the string of precious jewels, Ratnamala. Okay. Yeah. Okay, any other questions?
I get that last night's teaching is a projection coming from mind, but my mind, this mind, didn't create that teaching. Right? Mm-hmm. Many people in the room struggle with that teaching. So how does mind project a teaching like that teaching?
Okay, good. Yeah. I'll answer it in two different... I'll do a pincher movement, okay? Someone in one of the DC retreats, I don't remember, I think it was China. The Chinese asked a really good question. I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is about China, but they asked incredibly good questions, okay? And one of the questions was, how can I project something which I can't understand? You see, if it's coming from my mind, how could it be more difficult than my mind can understand? You see what I mean? It's a good question. And then I had another Chinese friend, Huang Jin from Shanghai. And he said, what's the karma to become more intelligent? Just worldly intelligence. You know, how can I increase my intelligence? You know, and I said, the karma of increasing your intelligence is to teach others. You see, what you learn, however much you understand, pass it on to others. It doesn't mean you have to print posters and struggle like we do to think of a new name for a lecture that will bring people. Or, you know, a more interesting poster than the other people's posters. You know, it's not like that. It just means watch for opportunities to share what you've learned in a non-invasive way. Like, we're not allowed to proselytize. But, so you just watch, and if someone's having trouble... Somebody asked me during the break a question about addiction, right? And if you know someone who has an addiction and who's honestly trying to overcome that addiction, then you might explain to them that you heard a talk that the guy said the way to overcome an addiction would be to help someone else with their addiction. See what I mean? And that might be the only way, actually. And that's why AA works so well. You see, out of all the systems. So the willingness to share with people who might be sincerely interested in what you have to share results in increased intelligence. So my friend Huang Jin from Shanghai, he tried it. He was a business. He's a businessman. He makes all the staples for Staples. I'm not kidding. Okay. In a place called Ningbo near Shanghai, and he tried it, and he started teaching. Then he said he was at home with an ancient Chinese manuscript that he couldn't read. The characters were too old, and he opened it up, and suddenly he understood all of it, you know. And then he started to go like this. He would read, and then he would. Like a newspaper, you know? And then he didn't catch what he was doing. And then his wife said, what are you doing? And he said, I'm reading the book, you know? And she said, this book is like 2,000 years old. How can you read it? He said, I don't know. You know? And he was turning it like this, you know? And then he was like, oh, it worked. My level of intelligence has changed. Noticeably. Like, so it's cool. So it is possible to project a teaching which you can't figure out yet. And it is possible to figure it out if you help others to try to figure it out. That's all. The karma of trying to help others to figure it out allows you to crack it. And if you don't, you never will. Okay? It's very interesting. My Lama asked me, so, you know, I had this other guy, his name's Art Engel. He translated the book. He said, you help Art Engel print his book. You know, this is the other student, the other main student, my lama. So naturally, I am insanely jealous of this book for 20 years. I think I'd still be jealous, but I moved away. So anyway, he's like, you help Art print his book. I paid for the first volume of Liberation in Your Hair. I went and worked. I made $25,000 and paid for it. You know? Then I edited it, and I typed it 3 times for him. You know, the person I disliked most in the world at the time. And then suddenly I could read it. You see what I mean? So, so it's like that. You serve someone who serves someone to help them understand it, and then it will come to you. You will understand it. Like that. Alright? It is possible for you to project from your mind something that your mind can't understand yet. Okay? Not, that's not a problem. Okay?
Yes.
Other, I think we have some time. Yeah. You're persistent. I want to give somebody a chance who doesn't have much chance. Yeah.
Yesterday, or the day before, or sometime, you were talking about the walls here being held up by our kindness, the karmic seeds of our kindness. You referenced the wall of water in Japan at some point as collective kindness, the karma, the collective karma having run out. I wonder if you could explain that a little bit more.
Yeah, okay, good. A couple questions come up very commonly about karma. One question is, can I give my karma to another person? See, can I collect the karmic seed for another person and share it? So if my friend needs money and they're not capable of being generous to make the karma to have money, can I somehow make extra karmic seeds and somehow share them with them? And the answer is no, okay? It's not possible to share a karmic seed with another person. A karmic seed can only be planted in your mind by yourself. No one else can plant a karmic seed in your mind. You can explain to someone else how to plant a karmic seed, but even then they still have to plant it themselves. You can't, it's not possible to plant a karmic seed in another person's mind, okay? All you can do is teach them how to do it themselves. So then the question arises of, how can you have a common experience, you see? How can X number of people perceive the same building at the same time? And that's an idea called collective karma, okay? So as a group, together, all of us knew each other in the past, and as a group, we sheltered somebody. And then we have the karma to perceive this room together, okay? When you do the pen thing, when you teach somebody about emptiness using the pen, right? And you say, what is this thing? And they say, be. And then you say, well, how does a dog see it? You know? And then they see it as a chew toy. But then a really intelligent person in the audience will say, but they both see a black tube. They both see a black cylinder. Okay? And that's true. Okay? They both have a shared karma to see a black cylinder. And that's collected by doing something together. Now I'll tell you a cool thing. National borders are created by those collective actions. Okay? The art of, I once went to Nogales. Sorry, Agua Prieta. And I said, gee, that'd be fun to stand with 1 foot in Mexico and 1 foot in the United States, you know? And I went and did it. It was kind of fun. You feel sort of vulnerable in between. But, so I stood with my feet in both countries. And then I look down the line and there is no line. It's just artificial, right? There's no difference in the rock or the sand, or it's all artificial. And then I was like, wow. So why are conditions so different on one side of this artificial line and so different on the other side? What creates that? And that's the collective karma of the people who live in that country, okay? That creates the border, and it creates the reality of very disparate economic conditions on two sides of an imaginary line. Okay? Communal actions. For example, someone asked me in Singapore, and I think I might have gotten in trouble. They said, if my country goes to war, and if a soldier in our army kills someone, do I get any karma? You know? And I said, that very question comes up in the Abhidhamma Kosha. And then the answer in the Abhidhamma Kosha is that all the people who live in a country who support the effort of a conflict, armed conflict, when a soldier on the front lines shoots a gun and kills somebody, you know, everyone who supported the war effort gets the same karma of killing a person equally. Everyone who supported the effort gets the karma equally. Those who supported it financially with their taxes get double. Why? They're inducing the soldier to kill. You see? They are, with the salary paid to the soldier, they are inducing the soldier to kill. They get the karma of killing themselves and of causing someone else to kill. So the taxpayers get double, the soldier only gets one. Okay? Then the guy, this is in Singapore, you know, which I was kind of spacing out and not remembering I was in a dictatorship. And, you know, and they said, well, what can we do about that? And then I said, well, if you object to the war effort formally, you don't get the karma. You see? If you write a letter to your congressman and you say, my taxes are being used for weapons that are being used to kill people. I don't support it. I hereby disassociate myself. You know, you don't have to go to jail. I did go to jail once over that kind of thing. But you can say it's considered sufficient through proper channels, according to your governmental system, to inform your representative that you disassociate yourself from that. Okay? And then you don't collect that karma. If you don't do that, you do get the karma. And then all the people who got that karma together, something bad will happen to them altogether. Like the tsunami. Okay, one more question. Then I get to go to bed.
What if you're illegal?
Sorry?
What if you're illegal and don't...
You can write an anonymous letter. Then I was careful in Singapore. I came to my senses, you know, and I'm like, you know, of course, in accordance with the government regulations, you should, you know, express your how you feel peacefully. One more? Who? You, Susie? Or somebody else? Okay.
We've been having this debate the last couple of days. At the Paradise Cafe, where we're diligently trying to get through our homework. I believe it was something you said in yesterday's meditation, the talk before the meditation. Myself and the other person heard you say toward the end that both good karma and bad karma really... we couldn't remember exactly what you said, but it implied that they're not really going to get you anywhere. They're not helpful. So, if that's true, then how can you what is the explanation for the whole seed theory? Because we're implying that good karma, bad karma is implied planting seeds, ripening, etc. So I wish I could remember your exact statement, but it had that, you know, implication. So.
Okay. A good deed done without understanding will create a positive result, which is temporary. And when it wears out, you will suffer. Okay? A good deed done without understanding will create a good result that's temporary. A bad deed, which is always done without understanding, creates suffering. Okay? So the problem with good deeds done without proper technique, which is how I like to say it nowadays. Okay? Good deeds done without proper technique. The problem with them is that they wear out. The results wear out. The wearing out of those results causes suffering. You know? And a good example is relationships with somebody. You meet a man or a woman and you start a relationship. There are certain seeds which caused you to meet that person. Okay? There are karmic seeds which caused you to meet that person. The meeting the person destroys those seeds. Meeting them begins the process of the wearing out of those seeds. Okay? The longer you know each other, the more seeds are destroyed. Which means you start fighting. Okay? Or you start disliking each other. It's natural. I was so relieved when I found out. I thought I was a bad person. You know, the natural progression of all interpersonal relationships with a person, a partner, if those seeds have been collected without knowledge, then the relationship must get old. It must get more boring. You should start quibbling, fighting. You lose interest in the other person. Something will happen, okay? So that's a real example that everybody can relate to. Because you've been through X number of relationships since you were 12 or whatever, okay? Left untended and planted without knowledge, all seeds of those relationships will wear out and you will lose interest or you will split up and it will be painful. Okay? Those seeds were collected by a good karma, okay? But without technique, without knowledge. Okay? If a good seed is planted with technique, with knowledge, we don't call it karma. Okay? That's not called karma. You can call it a seed. You can't call it a karmic seed. Okay? The word karma or le in Tibetan always refers to seeds which are planted without knowledge. Okay? So what's the seed for finding a partner? A very typical seed for finding a partner would be to help a lonely person. And then I like to say the elderly because those are some of the loneliest types of people, are the elderly. So people who come to me and say, I want to find a partner. How do I plant the seed to find a partner? Then I tell them, find an elderly person to help. Adopt unofficially an elderly person and help them. And that will create seeds that you will find a partner. Okay? So then I always give the example, I won't give it here because you all know her, or many of you know her. One lady came to me and said, I want to know what's the karmic seed to find a partner. I told her, go help a lonely person, especially elderly. And then I like to say, as a joke when we travel, I say, so out of all my students, she actually listened to me. And she did it. And she adopted an elderly person unofficially. And she cared for them. And then there was this beautiful incident in a yoga class in L.A. And she met Mr. Perfect. You know? Then she came to me and she said, oh, Geshe-la, you know, it's so wonderful I met Mr. Perfect, you know. and then we're going to get married, you know. Then I said, what happened to the old lady? You know, what happened to the elderly person? And she's like, well, I got the guy. I mean, you know, I said, no. You don't understand, you see. You have to keep replanting seeds. You see what I mean? You have to replenish the seeds. Every minute you spend with your new friend is going to wear out seeds of taking care of the old woman. So you can't stop. In fact, you and your new partner should adopt her. You see? You should make it part of your marriage or your relationship that she's part of your life and keep taking care of her. And see, that's a seed which is planted with technique. They are conscious of the fact that having their relationship, every hour that passes in their relationship, is destroying the seeds that brought them together. So you have they should understand, it's like a debit card, and then you have to replenish it. So a person who understands technique, they would get the girl or get the boy, and then them and the boy or them and the girl would adopt this lady. And they would make it a regular practice throughout the length of their relationship to continue taking care of this person. Okay? And I do it. She's coming on Thursday. You can see her. Okay? And I'm quite consciously doing that. Okay? So, now a question for you, Susie. Then you guys can go home. Is that karma? If I continue to take care of her, to create new seeds to make my relationship not only not diminish, but to get better every year. Is it karma? The new seeds that I'm making by taking care of her together, is it karma? Is it a good karma? That's a trick question. Is it a good karma?
Yes, of course.
Is it a good karma to take care of the old woman? Me and my...
Yes.
No.
I would say so.
No, it's not, okay?
Why?
We don't give it the word karma. We don't use the word karma. Karma can only be collected ignorantly. If you're planting seeds with knowledge, the word karma cannot be used for that.
So karma and seeds, they're not
in the
same words.
No. Okay, you could say pure seeds or impure seeds. Impure seeds are called karma. Pure seeds are called soksak. Say soksak. Soksak means assembling my Buddha paradigm. Which we will now recite, the very verse. So listen to the verse. That was a slick segue, right? Gets me out. You will hear the words in this prayer, Tsogzokshin, which means may all people learn to accumulate pure seeds, which don't wear out. Here we go. Thank you for that. Good night. See, have a nice day off.